Welcome to the Honesty Talks podcast. I am so glad you are joining the conversation today. I hope that you will dig deep with us, think honestly, and allow God to challenge us. As we explore, it is my hope that we grow and see more together. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Honesty Podcast. And right now we are actually going to be doing a series of everyday devotionals for counting the Omer in this season between Easter, Passover, Easter, Shavuot, and Pentecost. So there's this period of time that in the Jewish tradition they count what is called the Omer. And today, to help, actually for the next couple weeks, I have Jessica with me here, Jessica Larrabee, to help us walk through this every day for the next 3 weeks. So I'm going to hand it over to Jessica to say hi and actually explain what is an Omer.
Hi, yes. I would like to state that the Omer is 7 weeks, but we are starting in already at week 5, so we'll be doing the last 3 weeks of it. And the reason that we're okay with already starting halfway through is because an Omer is the amount that will fill you spiritually. So it is the perfect amount that will give you how much you need, and it will last for how long you need it. So no matter where you start, enter into it, you will still get what you need out of counting the Omer and sitting in what it means and reflecting with God on what the Omer will bring to you.
Awesome. And the historical reference to the Omer is, first it's used in Exodus to refer to the amount of manna taken every day. So that's kind of the spiritual filling that you're talking about.
Yes.
And historically, it was used to count down the days from Passover to when the people gathered around Mount Sinai in the Old Testament. And this throughout time, also when the temple was operational, built, they used this period of time from Passover until Shavuot, which is first fruits, to count grain offerings and what they would offer to God, their first fruits.
Yes, and the first use is in Exodus 16, and that is something we like to do a lot, is look at where's the first use in the Bible. So that is where we get the definition from, is related to counting the manna. And it also relates to, if you count the Omer, but then try to hoard it and control it for yourself, it becomes rotten and stinks, which is what happens if they tried to keep the manna for too long. So it is the balance of holding what God has given you, but not trying to control it.
Awesome. And there is a lot of historical references too, of like counting the Omer is, in history, it was an agricultural society. And so offering first fruits of their harvest was a big deal because it was everything that they did. It was how they lived. They grew all of their own food, and they offered the first fruits of that to God. And the Omer, in where it first shows up in scripture, the word Omer, using to count, is in Exodus, but it's in the spiritual sense of counting the amount of manna God provided for the people. And so that's how that is like hooking together, that there's this, it is really the spiritual context in what we are counting in ourselves and leading up to being at the mountain of God with the people of God. And also, what are we offering during this time frame in first fruits? And then following the Mount Sinai in first fruits time is Pentecost. Mm-hmm. It's like a couple days after that, and the coming of the Holy Spirit. And that all these things, like the timelines that don't happen all at once, they happen through time, are not happening on accident.
Correct. Yes. And when we look at Exodus 16, it says it is enough to fill your head and your soul. So it's really emphasizing on God's provision being enough for you physically, but also being enough for you spiritually, mentally, and just really how you inhabit the space with time and trusting that God's provision will continue to come.
And also with the historical context of offering grain, it's also the work of your hands is what's needed to be surrendered to God too.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't just about taking, there's a relationship. Mm-hmm. I think that the historical and, well, they're both historical because manna happened way before offering of grain, but like throughout time, that there's a both.
And I think it teaches us how to hold the passing of time better. Like, we are just leaving Passover, which is about what are you leaving during this season? And then it teaches us how to be mindful with our time as we move forward and as we're leaving out of this space, and just the intentionality of being present with God so we don't go back into the narrow place that we just left.
Mm. And for those of you who are listening and might not know what Passover is about, to give you a little background, Passover is 7-8 days long, and it is a whole week. And we celebrate during this time the exodus of the people from Egypt. And Egypt in the Hebrew is Mitzrayim, and Mitzrayim means narrow place. So there is a large spiritual truth to every year at Passover. We are looking at what are the narrow places that we have become slaves to. We work worshiping, serving other things other than God that we need to leave in life. And those can be spiritual realities, and they can also be physical realities. They can be jobs, relationships, things we believe about ourselves that we need to leave. So in this season where we've identified things to leave, counting the Omer is then a way to be more intentional and present with yourself and to not fall back into those patterns, mm-hmm. and really to make space for growth and what Omer. There is a structure and how we meditate on this and count it every day. And it involves prayers and a structure. So I'm going to let Jessica explain the structure of counting the Omer.
Yes, there are 7 different themes, and each week has its own theme, and each day has its own theme. And so you sit in what the weekly meaning is overall, as well as you sit in what the daily meaning is and how that plays a part into the weekly meaning.
So how it intersects. Awesome. And there's, when we're doing this, there's room for however, whatever God is speaking to you as you are counting, mm-hmm. and those weekly themes and daily themes, how they intersect. There'll be things that God points out to you that really stick with you. And really, it's a practice of hearing.
Mm-hmm. Hearing where God is leading you and what you need, because what Trin might need is different from what I need and what I'm going to get out of the counting.
So we want this to be a richness of space that's provided as we count the Omer, that there's room for individually we're going to encounter that differently.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just hope that you get a lot of richness out of these devotionals. We're going to share how we both interact with it, which is very different, and that there's room for how God may be moving in you in the counting of the Omer, mm-hmm. as well. All right. Good evening, everyone. It is the 37th day of the Omer, and the week we are in is Yesod, which means foundation, power, procreativity, bonding, covenant, reciprocal relationship. And the biblical people for this is Joseph and Tamar, and the color is orange.
And it is the evening of May 3rd, which is the Gevurah Day, and the meaning is strength, judgment, discernment, justice, restraint, and the discipline of setting boundaries. The people are Isaac, Sarah, and Leah, and the color is red.
I think strength, judgment, and discernment, and justice go with foundation and power.
Mm.
That's what's sticking out to me right away.
I like how the discipline of setting boundaries goes with bonding.
Say more about that.
Like, I think of boundaries as, like, always for myself. So, like, I've never thought of it of, like, bonding or reciprocal relationships, that how, like, when I set my boundaries, it can continue to just build onto other people and create better relationships. I've never, like, it makes sense. It's just it never had sat like that for me before.
Mm, that's really good. Because I think that's what we lack. Excuse me, guys. In some of our relationships is healthy boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't realize that it's like we always think of how it affects us. We don't think of it as like actually building a healthy space, mm-hmm. for the relationship to breathe. So I think you have a lot of good points there about the discipline of setting boundaries and bonding and covenant reciprocal relationship. Because like I think of some of the best reciprocal relationships I have are the ones with the healthiest boundaries.
Yeah. And that's even with the word covenant, and like then that's both of you to uphold. So you're both upholding the boundaries. Whereas if you see someone trying to step outside of their boundaries, you need to say like, no, this is what you set for yourself.
Mm. I also think that in relationship to God too, like the both stepping up and caring for the covenant or reciprocal relationship, that there's like discernment in reciprocal relationship too.
Yeah.
Like, I think discernment is more than, I think, how religious circles use it as just, I need to know which direction to go, so I'm going to sit and discern. It's like, discernment might be bigger than that, and how we see in relationships and actually see well enough to keep the covenants that we make with other people and the reciprocal relationships we have with other people and with God. Like, am I being discerning in my own self in relationship to God? Am I really caring for the covenant and the reciprocal? Do I even have a reciprocal relationship? Because I think we can use God is like a vending machine, transactional. I put this prayers in or this time or whatever, and I want A2 blessings.
Yep. And that we can't have a foundation, a healthy foundation at least, without those things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that we need each of those. We need the restraint. We need the justice. We need the judgment. We need the discernment, and we need the setting of boundaries to have a foundation.
And I think of God's judgment, strength, and justice in God's foundation and in God's power and in God's procreativity.
Yes.
Like if you look biblically, it's all about people being treated well, loved, included into the family and people of God. Mm-hmm. Every time that something happens either to the people of God or to the nation of Israel or whatever is happening, there's injustice happening. Rather it be on the side of people to the Israelites or Hebrew people or the Hebrew people to others.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this justice and strength and discernment and judgment component that's needed for a strong foundation. And I would say healthy power that we see absent in our world today.
Mm-hmm. And then even justice leads to procreativity then. So, like, injustice, we could say, like, kills procreativity then.
What do you mean?
Like, if justice leads to, like, creating life and creating stuff that will continue to move forward, then, like, if you're sitting in injustice, you're not going to create life out of that space.
Oh, that's true. I like that. And if you think about what's going on in our world today, it's built on a lot of injustice to people groups that are speaking up. And if we don't reconcile that, our foundation is, well, we've seen what our foundation is, janky.
Yeah.
Because we need to acknowledge what we've built on.
And that's the people who've had injustice are trying to just create life in a healthy way.
Right. They're trying to build a better foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the foundations and the power that we have matter. Mm-hmm. Like the foundations we build and how are we building our foundations? Are we building them on the backs of other people?
Mm-hmm.
And are we using our power in ways that are unhealthy toward certain people?
And that's, I think the judgment and the discernment needs to play a huge part in that.
Mm-hmm. And like, what are we doing with it? What are we doing with our power?
Mm-hmm.
You know, as it regards to other people, and what would God have us do with it, with our power?
Yeah, how do we use our power for God's agenda rather than our own?
Yeah, I would definitely say that. Ooh, and I think of all of that in context of the covenant and reciprocal relationship, because if we're not building good foundations, we're not using our power while we're not having like good judgment and discernment and there's injustice going on, like what kind of bond are you creating?
Mm-hmm.
Right? With people and like God. What kind of covenant are you keeping or not? And what kind of reciprocal relationship? Because I don't think it's reciprocal at that point.
Oh. Yeah.
So I don't know. This is a heavy one.
I was going to say that's, I like that weight of like determining and having the discernment of how to have a reciprocal relationship and even what is and do you need to then maybe set boundaries to create a reciprocal relationship that's currently not?
Mm-hmm.
And I think also having the discernment and the strength to know that maybe the relationship needs to be let go if it's not reciprocal.
And that makes me think about better judgment,
mm-hmm.
too, like in relationship to reciprocal relationship and setting boundaries and that it's related.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But I think that goes with the power, too, on if you guys are both discerning and trying to have your power for God, you're going to be more likely to have the reciprocal relationship. Whereas if one of you is just trying to have the power in the relationship, it's not going to be even.
So what it brings to mind when looking at the biblical characters that are for this day is we are on Isaac, Sarah, and Leah. And what's interesting to me is Leah sticks out to me because Leah was Jacob's wife.
Mm-hmm.
And Jacob worked all these years to get actually her sister, Rachel, which was the younger sister.
Mm-hmm.
And he was tricked and obviously thought he was marrying Rachel, but married Leah. And then he worked another however many years to get Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
Leah is not the loved wife, but Leah is the wife that most of the tribes of Israel come from.
Hmm.
Is the unloved wife. Because Jacob only wanted Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
And so, now granted, there's other, he does produce children with other people and their maidens, and that was a common practice in the time. Not saying it's okay, because no. But this whole idea of strength, judgment, discernment, justice, discipline of setting boundaries, and also like bonding, covenant, reciprocal relationships, foundation, and power. Leah has a big part of setting the foundation of what will be Israel's tribes.
Mm-hmm.
And like, there's like the covenant that comes with the people from that. Like, she's a huge part of setting part of the trajectory of the story for the people.
Hmm.
But I see that there's not, she sees a lot of, I feel for her. She's always trying to get like love. You can see that in how she names her children too. And how she responds, maybe this one, you know, he'll love me.
Mm.
But she doesn't see that like what God brings from what maybe Jacob didn't want is actually setting trajectory for the whole story.
Yeah, that's powerful.
So, like, again, what we always think we see and think is best is not always what God is doing. And it's not that God wants her to be the unloved wife. Let me just say that. I'm mm-hmm. just saying that God does work through situations and in people and with situations that are created by us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not always in the ways that we think.
I like that thought. Because that's, I was looking at the people and, like, when I look at Sarah, I'm just like, I don't see restraint or boundaries. Like, I struggle with her being linked to this one because it's like, I always think, like, you gave your servant to have this child, and so, like, there is no restraint there.
But at the time, this was common. And, like, in the story of Leah, Rachel, and Jacob, the same thing is done. They give their servants to Jacob as well to have children. So this was a common, like they call it, a helpful term would be womb slave.
Because
mm-hmm. they owned these people, and any children they would bear on, like these servants would bear, would actually belong to those women.
Yeah. And I guess if you look at like Sarah in relation to Abraham, there was a lot of strength and judgment and discernment in terms of like trying to follow God and just wander around in the wilderness waiting for God to show them the place.
Yeah. I think there can be like room for both. Like, God promised you this, but you guys had your own plan. But also God didn't really like specify until later mm-hmm. how the child would come.
Yeah.
So they were thinking with their own limited, I think, scope. But it's hard. It's like complicated is what I'm saying.
And how often do we do that even today? We limit God by what we know to be true rather than like just open up our brains to the idea that it's God. He's going to do what they want to do. And like, that's just going to be what happens. Why are we limiting
how God can move in us based off of what we know.
Yeah, that's very true. Oh, well, I think we can wrap this session up here. How about you?
Yeah, I think that's a good point to just reflect on the rest of this evening and tomorrow is how are you limiting God in your life?
Right, and what kind of foundation is that building?
Mm-hmm.
So, and because we have a part in that.
Yes, we do.
Blessings on your evening and morning. I hope today's conversation has been deep and transformative. Please consider becoming a Patreon supporter to help us continue and expand the Honesty Talks podcast. When you are a Patreon supporter, you will get to be a part of our online community. You can also get other great things like early access to episodes, participating in polls, and making suggestions on future podcast topics, and so much more. For more information and to donate, go to patreon.com/honesty_talks. Thank you for listening and join us next time.